Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
This is Five Live.
Wake up to money.
And a very good morning to you. David Jones with me, Adam Parsons here on Five Live. And coming up between now and six, Greece's proposals have been unveiled. A new tax on business and the wealthy. But how will the Eurozone react? We're going to be talking batteries. Has a UK company come up with the invention that will harness the sun's power and change the world? And Thorntons has been bought by Ferrero Rocher for a sweet £112 million. We will savour that deal.
The Financial Times today talks of Athens keeping the bailout deal alive, while the Telegraph says the Bank of England is predicting sharp rises in wages in the year ahead. The FTSE, good day yesterday, jumping up to close 115 points higher at 6,826.
This is BBC Five Live.
Lots to talk about this morning, lots of it beginning with Greek. As the first word of that sentence. Like to hear from you, 85058. Are you impressed with what you've heard about this Greek deal? And also going to be talking later on about batteries. And before in this programme, David, we've had people saying that batteries that can last for longer, that can store power, could be the most important new invention of the world if we can harness this. So we'd like to hear from you this morning about what would you like to see in the world? If you could invent anything, what would you invent? What would you like to put your name behind? Because these batteries, to be fair, could change the world, couldn't they?
I think so, because that's when we were talking about innovations in cars, weren't we, a few weeks ago? And one of the things about electric cars, we'd see a wider take-up if we had maybe 150 extra miles or so of range and got rid of that range anxiety. So you'd have a big impact there.
Yeah, we'll be asking this company about that, I'm sure, later on. It's a UK company. Tesla, of course, are doing a similar thing. I'm sure there are others. I'm sure the Chinese have got their eyes on this as well. But 85058, what would be the single invention you would like to come up with? Or you can tweet us at BBC5Live. And your thoughts on everything and anything in the programme as well. You might want to give us your thoughts on this Greek debt deal, because this is going to be our big story. It may well linger, I suspect, over the summer as well. Greece lives to fight another day. Greece back from the brink. Greece takes a step back from the abyss. However you say it, headlines look quite familiar this morning. There's a little sense of déjà vu. Nice, wasn't it? We had the emergency summit in Brussels yesterday to try to resolve the standoff over Greece's debt. And, well, things didn't go badly. We didn't actually get a deal, but Eurozone leaders emerged looking quietly confident.
The new Greek proposals to the three institutions are a positive step forward, according to the initial assessment of the institutions. They will be further assessed over the coming hours.
That was the president of the European Council, Donald Tusk, last night. Europe again seemed cautiously optimistic. The International Monetary Fund chief, Christine Lagarde, said, though, there was still a lot to do.
We are working and we will continue to work on the basis of a new proposal, which is certainly more comprehensive and includes much more details than what we had seen, but it still lacks specificity. It is still short of everything that should be expected. So there will be room for negotiation, room for work, and hopefully we will be constructive in a very short period of time. So we're short on time, long on work.
The European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said Europe and Greece were even closer to a deal.
I'm confident that the Eurogroup on next Wednesday will produce results to be submitted to the European Council on Thursday. I'm convinced that it is not only our intention to finalise the decision-making process this week, we will finalise the process this week.
Jean-Claude Juncker, they're pretty confident. What is new? Well, the key thing in these new proposals is significant concessions for the first time. New taxes on businesses and on the wealthy. The Greek Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras, has said the ball was now in Europe's court and it was up to European authorities to find a deal. to save Greece from defaulting on its debt. Well, our markets guest this morning is George Gobber, who's a fund manager at Mite On. George, the city, FTSE 100, opened up strongly, finished strongly yesterday. What is this, the end of the beginning of the end, or just a nice idea?
Yeah, it's probably not time for Churchillian quotes just yet. I think it is a delay, a kicking of the can down the road. What does it mean for investors? Well, there has been uncertainty. The FTSE 100 has been weak over the last month, and so there was a little bit of a relief, but I don't think it's actually a permanent solution.
Is Greece actually sorting out its problems? Because the one thing we should say is that if they do a deal this time, they get the bailout funding, 7 billion euros or so. But actually, if you look at the schedule of payments over the next couple of months, that'll all get used up very quickly.
Yes, you're exactly right, Adam. What we are actually coming up against, mate, why has this reared its head? These are the first payments from the previous 100 billion euro bailout, and the interest bill on those alone is pretty vast, as well as the ongoing debt that it had to deal with. And I don't see really from the proposals that have been put forward that it's enough to deal with the structural problems in the Greek economy, but it does give them some breathing room.
Going to be talking about this more, of course, later in the programme. Sonny Kapoor, the economist, will be joining us. It's 5:21.
Wake up to money around the world
on 5 Live. 5 Live.
Hello, this is Kerry Leahy of Decision Economics with your Wake Up to Money Wall Street update. Stock market averages in the U.S. were up between 0.5% and 0.75% at the end of trading on Monday. Favorable news on Greece, with the prospect of a deal being struck between Greece and the European lenders, sent the U.S. market higher. Also, good news on U.S. home sales, with an increase in first-time home buyers, also provided support to the market.
Kerry Leahy there in New York. Let's go to Singapore and look at the Asian markets with Rico Hee-sun. Good
greetings,
morning.
Greetings from Asia. Adam, David.
Greetings indeed. Right, well, we've seen a markets bounce here across Europe. How about in Asia?
Oh, yes, it's bouncing higher as well. As mentioned by your guest, we're seeing a relief rally for a second day in the regional markets. Japan, Adam, is hitting a 15-year high, gaining another 1.5% today. Sydney rallying 1.1%. Seoul up by 1.3%. I mean, this Greek proposal and hopefully a debt deal will currently inspiring many Asian investors.
That Japanese market is really flying, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Indeed. It is flying, low valuations. You know what? When I started the business reporting about 20 years ago, Adam, the Nikkei 225 was close to 40,000. And at its lowest, it was at its at about 8 or 9,000 in the Nikkei. Now it's back up almost half from when I started business reporting. So things are looking up.
I think it's down to you, Rico. I think that's really what we can extrapolate from that.
Rico, it's not all good news, though, apparently, I don't think, is it? We've got China factory output. We've seen that shrink again for the fourth straight month. What's the reason for that?
Well, you have continuing sluggish demand at home, David, and overseas, which has left many factories in the mainland, particularly in heavy industries, laden with overcapacity. And this has led the manufacturers to continue their layoffs. And the latest cutbacks, Adam, have basically led to the sharpest layoffs in over 6 years. But nevertheless, investors are cheering these preliminary figures, suggesting a contraction in Chinese manufacturing activity may be easing. That's why it is also helping support the positive sentiment in Asian markets.
So despite all those layoffs then, which sounds like quite a drastic measure, it sounds like investors think this is only going to be a short-term thing.
Yes, and the key word right now that is moving the markets with the support of China is stabilization, because, you know, there have been small signs of recovering demand in China, new orders returning to positive territory. You know, China has been doing everything it can over the past year to pump prime the economy with fiscal monetary easing measures, 3 interest rate cuts in 6 months. But nevertheless, the pickup has been slow. Growth has slowed to a 6-year low of 7% from the January to March quarter. And we could still expect that slowdown in this second quarter. However, what investors are looking out for are more fiscal initiatives and more interest rate cuts that could boost the market in the short to medium term.
Now, we're talking about innovations and invention on the program this morning, but later on, Rico, I mean, you're in a bit of the world which is extremely innovative and tech savvy. If you were to put your name to something, Rico, what would it be? What would you like to see the world come up with?
What would they like to see the world come up with?
I've not given you that much notice on that one, to be fair, for an epoch-changing invention.
My goodness, from watches to cars to, I mean, maybe I can just, when I go home, the door will open up for me. It will do all my cooking. I don't need any household help. I mean,
a robot Rico.
I'll just be a robot Rico. Why not?
That's the thing the world needs, robot Rico.
But not a robot Rico news presenter. No, thank you.
I think we can all agree that would be automated news presenters are a wholly bad idea.
It will take over our jobs.
Not in our vocabulary
for innovation.
Clearly, Rico, it wasn't protectionism in any way that we had in mind, but it just would be a bad idea. Okay, right. 10-second weather forecast. How's it looking in Singapore, Rico?
Well, it's a bit cloudy at the moment. There's been a sporadic rain here in Singapore. Well and good. Still 30 to 32 degrees despite the rain. You know, gentlemen, one of these days you should visit us here in Singapore.
We will do that. We will do that. Righto, Rico. Thank you very much indeed. That's Rico Heason, of course.
Thank you.
Out in Singapore. Thank you for your thoughts already about what would you like to invent. Some really good ideas, actually. Soundproof wallpaper. What a great idea that is. Overnight billionaire says this text, if I could invent a proven hangover cure. Yeah, I guess that would work. And I'd like this one. Sleep microwave. If a pasta bake can be cooked in 3.5 minutes in a microwave, I could get a full night's sleep in 50 minutes. Perfect when you get up at stupid o'clock like us gents, says Daniel. A very good point. And now we're going to look at the papers now. And I'll tell you what, this time yesterday, David, we were talking about Taylor Swift and how she was
standing up
to Apple. And while I will allow everyone to draw their own conclusions, we mentioned it on Wake Up to Money at about 5:30. Apple backed down at about 5:45. If you want to draw the conclusion.
Coincidence? I don't know.
Coincidence? It seems a mighty big one, doesn't it? Right. Lots of grease in the papers this morning.
Yeah, the newspapers. So it's difficult to find the non-Greece stories. But let's start off with the FT's Greek headline. Greek shift in stance keeps alive hopes for a bailout deal. So all the papers are a bit thin on details, actually, about what Greece is proposing. But the FT is saying, you know, we're seeing hopes now of an 11th hour deal. The proposals the Greeks put forward came too late for a definite agreement at that emergency meeting that started last night. But, everyone's hopeful that we will see a bit more agreement as the week goes on. There was a slight element of farce to it. Well, I think one of the reasons it was last minute, apparently Athens accidentally sent through the wrong draft on Sunday night and then sent the real one through early Monday morning. But looking a lot more positive than it did this time yesterday.
Yeah, although fair to say quite a few papers at times notably still a little bit dubious, aren't they, as to whether they're going to pull this one off. In the Guardian business section, Tesco voted worst for observing guidelines on supplier dealings. Tesco has been rated by its suppliers as the worst of the big supermarkets at complying with a government-backed industry code. That's their main business story. Of course, they've got Greece on the front page of the paper.
That story we mentioned at the beginning, in the Telegraph, wages to rise sharply. This is according to the Bank of England Deputy Governor Sir John Cunliffe. He said we'll see more sharp pay rises ahead. Of course, we saw just recently, I think, in April, over the 12-month period to April, wages had risen by 2.7%. And Sir John Cunliffe saying this is going to continue as business investment takes off, productivity soars. And he says the era of cheap labour after the financial crisis is well and truly over.
The Independent says Thornton's shares jump as Ferrero unwraps details of a sweet deal. Going to be talking about that later. Another one from the Times is our pension funds focus on UK equities is costing savers dearly, they say. Studied by Goldman Sachs says because funds are reluctant to invest in overseas companies. Final salary of a company in the biggest 350 in the UK Well, there's loads of stuff in there.
And that's, it's interesting that that angle, I think, from Goldman Sachs, because they're saying that the pension funds of those top 350 companies, they say they're overweight in the UK. They seem to have a bias, because they're based in the UK, towards the UK. And they're saying, actually, because British quoted companies, it's only 7% of the world's listed companies, and having 29% of pension money in here is somewhat skewing the results, and they could be better off diversifying the risk.
And our top story, Eurozone leaders hope that a deal to stop Greece defaulting on its debt can be struck in days. Apple Music has reversed its payment policy a day after the singer Taylor Swift said she was refusing to allow the company to stream her album. And Thornton shares rose more than 42% after the Italian chocolate maker Ferrero made a bid for the company. More on that later in the programme. Our daily reminder, you can download the podcast, bbc.co.uk/5live. Lots of you getting in touch with some very good ideas for inventions that you would like to see. A solar-powered monorail alongside the M25, says David. I think that might cost a few quid, David. Still, we're going to change the world here, so why be constrained? I would take all the shopping trolleys, says Davey, and permanently fix the wheel that sends them in the opposite direction. World peace and contentment would follow. You may well be right, actually. And Claire and Tamworth says, car indicators that show up in bright sunshine. There's some very, very good ideas here. If you're an innovator or inventor, you might want to download this podcast and start nicking some of these thoughts. Right, keep them coming. 85058 is our text number, or you can tweet us at BBC5Live. We are talking about inventions because one of the great challenges for our world is improving batteries. We're very good at generating power, not very good at storing it. The tech billionaire Elon Musk made headlines last month when his business, Tesla, unveiled something called Powerwall. It's a battery that charges using solar power and keeps on powering your house when the sun goes down. But he's not the only one trying to work out new ways of doing this. Here in the UK, Powervault has just raised nearly £800,000 to develop its own domestic battery. The idea is pretty similar. Those homes with solar panels can save spare energy for later use rather than exporting it to the national grid. And the managing director of Powervault is Joe Warren. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me on the programme this morning.
Absolute pleasure. Right, tell us about this product. Are you the UK Tesla?
Well, we haven't invented a solar-powered monorail, but what we have done is designed the UK's first fully integrated energy storage device, and it's aimed at people with solar PV panels. And quite simply, it stores energy when the sun is shining, and it gives the energy back to the customer in the evening when they need to use it.
How easy is it to store energy? Because, let's be honest, we know the answer to that is not at all, because the world has struggled to do this. What have you discovered that no one else has come up with?
It has been challenging to store energy, and most of the people who have solar PV in the UK don't have any form of energy storage. So what we've come up with is a really easy way to store energy, and a very simple to install product that's a complete system in a box. It's got batteries, chargers, inverters, and all the other kind of clever electronics that are needed that can be installed very simply and easily and retrofitted to UK homes.
How much does it cost then? Let's cut to the quick here, Joe.
So it's being retailed for between £2,000 and £2,800, depending on the precise configuration. And it's available on sale from solar resellers.
Joe, I've had a quick look at some of this online, looking at your product. It's not small, is it? Can you describe it to us and exactly how you see this fitting into the home?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a fair comment. It's about the size at the moment of a slimline dishwasher. We're working to reduce the size of the product, and we're very confident that it's going to reduce over time. Typically, people are putting the product in their garage, perhaps in the utility room or also the kitchen. Mine is in my dining room at home, so a pride of place in the home.
The government has been talking this week about subsidies for various forms of electricity. Has the reduced... There's a thing called a feed-in tariff, which is a payment for generating green energy. Has that hit you? Reductions in that?
Not really, no. I mean, the feed-in tariff reduction has mostly hit sort of larger installations, kind of installed in fields. The sort of amount of reduction for people with solar PV panels is very slight. It only affects new installs, and I think it's equivalent to about sort of £50 to £100 a year. So it's a relatively small reduction for homeowners with solar PV.
And is your focus on saving people money or saving the planet? Because for $2,500, it's going to take me quite a long time to get my money back, isn't it, by the money I save on electricity?
At the moment, we're selling the product to early adopters. So these are people who do want to save the planet and they want to use more of the energy they generate. We're confident that we can get the cost of the product down considerably so that it can become a mass market product aimed at sort of everybody who has solar PV panels. We're confident that we can achieve that in the next few years and that everybody who has solar PV panels will want to have storage as well.
And what about this Tesla challenge? Because like it or not, he is an incredibly good promotional expert, Elon Musk. Is that helping you because people are more interested in solar power, or are you a bit worried that his ideas will take over the world?
I mean, I think it's hugely positive for PowerVault and also for the whole of the industry. I think if you'd asked anybody 3 months ago what energy storage was, very few people would have been able to give you a good answer. But Elon has done a great job in promoting energy storage in the home. He's raised awareness hugely and he's helping to build the market. So I think it's very positive news for all of us. And I think it underlines the size of the market opportunity. There's 650,000 people in the UK with solar PV panels. Forecasts suggest this could grow to 2 million by 2020. There's a huge market there and a really good opportunity for everybody in the market.
Joe, thank you very much for joining us. Joe Warren is the Managing Director of PowerVault 540.
We'll take a look at the markets. Of course, we've got George Godber here, Fund Manager at Miton. We saw yesterday very healthy start to stock markets. The London stock market, the FTSE 100, was up just over 100 points. Over in Germany, their index, the DAX, had its fourth biggest rise ever. Up 9%, which is a sizable old one-day move for a major stock market. George, is this solely down to Greece, the moves yesterday?
Yeah, the relief rally or the move on the Greek news, you know, was significant. There had been concern. Why was there that concern? Because, to be quite frank, that you know, we've talked about Greece, you know, certainly almost every time I've been on Wake Up to Money for the last 4 years. This time it was on the brink and it would have gone at the end of the month. It would have gone bankrupt and the banks were running out of money and were requiring emergency funding. But the problems aren't solved, as discussed earlier in the show, so there will be some relief from this. From investors' point of view, you know, how can you see this most clearly? Year to date, the FTSE 100, which is the biggest companies in the UK, those most affected by the world economy, is up 4%. The FTSE 250, which is much more about smaller UK domestic-only businesses, up nearly 11%. So the outlook for the UK economy has been reflected as much stronger in share price moves for those more domestic-focused businesses, the house builders, the retailers, etc. The question is that going to turn around with the Greek news? I probably don't think so.
And as we were saying earlier on, you know, this isn't going to go away. You know, we'll probably be talking about Greece again in a couple of months, assuming this all gets done this time round. Stock markets had been fairly relaxed about the situation in Greece up until recent weeks. Then we saw the nerves come in. I was wondering, though, as a fund manager, how do you cope, or how do you know, decide when it comes to investing when you have this problem, this potential bombshell always looming there in the background?
Well, the way that we approach risk is we always try and focus on what we think we can control. And do I understand the balance sheets and the assets and the cash flow of the businesses that we invest in? And that's how we think about controlling risks. And it is very important because I think you can get caught. There's always risks in investing. You know, you take a risk when you put money to work outside the bank or outside, you know, buying UK gilts from, you know, government debt. So we do our best to control that risk by diversifying the exposure of the fund and by making sure that we understand what we actually own.
OK, and looking at some company-specific news, we've got, of course, the Royal Bank of Scotland, RBS AGM, their annual general meeting for shareholders. That takes place in Edinburgh a bit later today. Now, they're going to have to face shareholders, the board, following that somewhat embarrassing glitch, which is, I think, the series of lots of maybe technical hiccups that have plagued banking. But last week, we saw 600,000 payments fail to go through for NatWest customers and RBS customers, of course. How are they expected to react to this?
Well, I think there's always a lot of pressure on RBS at their shareholder meetings, not least because there's multiple interest groups. You know, 87% of the shares are owned by everyone listening to this show. And so that therefore means that there's a lot of people who have a lot of opinions. And that means that the spotlight is very firmly on them. You know, they will make the 10 o'clock news this evening, whereas most other companies, when they have their AGM, don't. RBS is
getting to grips with its problems, but in terms of a clean-up operation, it's, you know, it's not quite the sort of jet washing that people are doing on their patios at this time of year. You need, you know, it is going to take a very long time, and they are making progress, but quite rightly the spotlight will remain on them.
And do you think the government is right to look to offload the rest of its stake in RBS, or should we be hanging on, you know, for the next 5 or 10 years and looking for further recovery within the banking shares?
The shares will recover, but they have got a greater chance of recovering as the government reduce their holding. The government needs to separate itself from RBS. It's become a political football, and actually, to be quite frank, the bank doesn't operate in the way it should be doing because of the state ownership. So I think we've got to maximise the returns for taxpayers from the huge monies that they put in, and a gradual sell down over time is the best way to achieve that.
George, thanks for that. We'll leave it there for now. That's George Godbert, fund manager at Miton. A quick look at the numbers yesterday. Lots of triple digit gains. FTSE jumping 115 points to 6,826. The Dow Jones last night in the US added 104 points, closing at 18,120. And to complete the treble, a short while ago in Japan, the Nikkei was up 300 points at 20,728, which was another fresh year high.
Across the UK,
this is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Wake up to money.
Andy in East London says the best invention would be a teleporter. To be able to move anything from one place to another instantly would solve many problems. No traffic jams, never late for anything, aid into disaster zones, and the ability to recreate Star Trek as well, which of course is often underestimated in that one. And AD says, I'd like to put my name to a bottle top that children couldn't open but pensioners could. And that's another very, very good idea. Thank you. 85058, inventions you'd like to put your name to. Now, I promise you more on Greece and the big question. Has it really come up with a solution to its debt crisis? Certainly. There's now a deal on the table, and it appears to offer a greater hope than any offer that's come before, with new taxes imposed and a rise in VAT. These proposals haven't been agreed yet. Germany's still pushing for controls over the country's under pressure banks. But what about the offer behind this? Well, Greece's economy minister, Georgios Stathakis, confirmed those tax changes, but said that no cuts would be made to pensions.
I think it was because obviously pensioners and wage earners have suffered roughly a 40% decline during the previous 5 years. This constituted one of the red lines of our government, but we have to find a solution. But the red line is no further cuts in pensions and wages. We stick to this idea, and I think we came up with alternative propositions, which they are accepted.
So that's the view from Greece. Eurozone finance ministers cautiously welcome the plan, saying there could be a deal within days. Well, with us is Sonny Kapoor. Sonny's the managing director of Redefine, an international think tank that advises finance ministries and central banks. Sonny, you always said that the chance of an accidental exit was zero. Why did you think that? Why were you so confident that that something would be done?
Well, at some level, despite our experiences otherwise, there is competence within the European Policymaking Committee. It would have been unthinkable and completely irresponsible to let Greece fall out of the Eurozone over something that is actually less than 0.1% of European GDP, the size of the disagreement between the two sides.
Yeah.
And even, no matter how much incompetence you might accuse the Europeans of actually having, I think this is way beyond their capacity too.
So is your reading that for all the I's that need dotting and so on, that the deal has been done?
Well, the deal to avert what a lot of people were panicking about has been done. There will be no exit, and Greece will continue to sort of go generate headlines, unfortunately. But there isn't any particular reason to panic. And I think that is important. As to when we will be able to say that the Greek problem has been solved, the indebtedness has been tackled, that's not happening for several years from now. So maybe in 2020, maybe in 2025, we'll look back and say, oh yes, Greece has finally stabilized. But for the foreseeable future, the best we can hope for is that there isn't going to be a crisis.
And yet, maybe you can clear this up for us. The 7 billion euros of bailout funding that's coming their way now only covers interest payments to these three institutions up until the end of August. So what happens after that? It doesn't Greece run out of money again? Don't we just end up with the same problem?
Well, Greece has now actually got a primary surplus. So the only reason that it actually needs more money is to repay existing creditors. And that means that the parameters of negotiation simply are limited to what the repayment schedule for the IMF, for the European Central Bank, and for the bilateral loans that it has from other EU members is going to be. So everybody, there's essentially four actors that can sit at the table and negotiate as to how to structure this repayment. And that's always doable. So Greece doesn't actually need money for external purposes outside of repaying existing creditors.
And looking at the terms of the deal, Sonny, I think everybody agrees that A, the level of debt is hugely onerous, and B, what Greece needs is a growing economy. Does this deal address either of those fundamental issues, do you think?
So Greece had already started growing until there was an election and change in government. And because of the obstreperous nature of negotiations, there has been a slow collapse of confidence. And the Greek economy has actually suffered about 2% of GDP decline. But there is a lot of money at the sidelines. There is a lot of money within the Eurozone. The quantitative easing program from the European Central Bank is working. And there's cyclical recovery all around. So I have full confidence that when this deal is actually signed, the money sitting at the sidelines is going to come flow into the Greek economy and the recovery will start again. So I think that we will see tax revenues pick up. We will see investment pick up. We will see confidence coming back into the Greek economy. It's not going to address the question of the debt overhang, but in the short term, things will start to look better. And politically, that is the single most important thing. Greeks have lost hope, and hope will come back in some diminished measure.
Certainly. So what you're saying is actually this month is pretty momentous. You know, we're worried about July and August, but you're saying now that this is going to put a line underneath the Greek crisis. And if we come to talk about it again, we won't be going down to the wire like we have this month. Is that correct?
I'm keeping my fingers crossed about that. But yes, I think that the worst would be behind us once we are into July and this deal has been signed. There will be questions about long-term restructuring of Greece's debt. There will be questions about Greece's terms of relations with the rest of the Europeans. And we need to build up trust because there's been a total collapse of trust between Syriza, which is ruling in Greece, and the European partners. But those are all questions which will hopefully not generate the kind of headlines we have seen, which will not generate the panic response we have seen in the markets. So headlines, yes, but not panic.
Something yesterday, the gentleman on yesterday was saying that Greece needs, I think, about 150 billion euros of investment over the next 5 years to really boost the economy. But do you think there needs to be a change in government or a change in attitudes by the government to make Greece maybe more palatable at the moment to outside investors?
Well, the single best thing that Syriza can do for Greece is to take on the clientelist interests. And that was the big hope when the government changed, that for the first time, there was in power a party that had not been part of the clientelist state, because power alternated between New Democratic as well as PASOK. And they put their cronies in government, in state-owned enterprises, etc. And the thing with Syriza was they had never been in power before. They had their hands clean. And the question remains, and this is the moot point, we see over the next few months whether Syriza actually takes on those entrenched interests, whether one actually gets a functioning economy, whether one actually gets oligopolies that exist in Greece that are broken. And that creates opportunities for private enterprise. So yes, Syriza has these leftish reputation and credentials, but if they actually create opportunities by taking on entrenched interests that have been having a stranglehold over the Greek economy, the opportunities will far outweigh whatever risk they actually might pose.
Sonny, thank you very much for coming by to Sonny Kapoor there. I suspect we will come back to the topic of Greece.
I hope not, but I suspect we will.
I think you're probably right. It's just going up to 5 to 6. Now, he looked around the room. Do we all remember this?
The ambassador's receptions are noted in society for their host's exquisite taste.
Oh, Ferrero Rocher.
Delicious.
Excellente.
Monsieur, with this Rocher, you're really spoiling us.
Ferrero Rocher, a sign of good taste.
It is, of course, the Ferrero Rocher advert. Very pertinent because Thornton's shareholders might have felt a little spot yesterday. Shares in the company rose 42% after Ferrero made a bid. Any deal will still have to be approved by shareholders. Management are backing the takeover. But what would a deal like that mean for the business, which has been making chocolate for more than 100 years? Lee McCoy is a chocolate analyst and enthusiast. George Godber from Miton is still with us. Right, Lee, let's kick off with you. Ferrero Rocher taking over Thornton's. What does that mean to the chocolate world, Lee?
I think for confectionery lovers, it'll be a good thing because it helps continue the line of Thornton's in the UK and hopefully abroad as well.
Ferrero also makes Nutella, Kinder Eggs and Tic Tacs. That doesn't sound a hugely sort of premium range. Thornton's going to go down market, do you think, Lee?
No, I think that's quite in line with the ranges that Thornton's currently offer.
Is Thornton still a posh chocolate range?
No.
Okay, why not? Tell us about Thornton. What do you see? When you see Thornton's, what do you think?
I think they've had an opportunity over the last few years. They had one of the world's best chocolatiers, Keith Herdman, working in there and trying to put forward the premium ranges, but the accountants didn't want that. They needed to revitalise the business in terms of the finances. So that left the business lacking in terms of the quality of the product. So I wouldn't say they're a premium range at all.
George Godber, I don't know if you're a chocolate fan, but you're pretty damn good at looking at balance sheets. And Thornton's has been a struggling company for years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, underinvestment. And, you know, this is a business that was a real innovator. They were the people who invented putting names on Easter eggs in 1920. And that was, helped build the business. You mentioned the huge premium the shares were taken out yesterday. Actually, the shares went out for just 16% more than where they listed 27 years ago. So from an investor's point of view, from the business point of view, it's struggled. And actually, I think it's likely to do better under different management and ownership that can probably therefore invest in the business.
What would you do, Lee, if you were running Thornton's? If today you started with a clean slate of paper, what would you do?
I would definitely bring in some top quality chocolatiers to actually look at the products. Quite often the management wanted products that would last a long time on the shelves, they can go in supermarkets around the world. And obviously with that, then the quality of the product reduces. So I'd look at trying to have a shorter shelf life, but a premium range within their own stores.
Lee, you're clearly an expert on this, and I understand. I think many of our listeners might be somewhat jealous of your job because apparently you've sampled more than 1,000 chocolate bars. You do about 3 a week, so our research team tell us. I wonder, how do you manage that? How do you manage to maybe have a balanced diet? And doesn't it put you off chocolate when you've got to eat it as part of your job?
No, there's new chocolate coming out every day, every week, from all around the world. Basically, all you do is you find new and innovative chocolate and you don't eat the whole bar. You just eat part of it. Like wine tasting. Exactly.
Crikey. What's the very, very best chocolate bar in the world, Lee?
Ooh, it depends on your taste, but there's some good stuff coming out of New Zealand. It's just like the wine, as was said. You know, the New World, Australia, America. You can choose the Wellington Chocolate Company in New Zealand. You can go on. Depends on your taste.
Well, but there we go. Lee McCoy, thank you very much indeed. He's a chocolate analyst and enthusiast. Sonny Kapoor, you're a chocolate man?
Of course.
You look sort of offended that I could even ask the question.
No, I am. I start my mornings with a chili chocolate.
Do you?
Yeah.
You start the morning with a chocolate bar?
No, with a hot chocolate, chili chocolate.
Good.
Nothing better for your system.
That's very European of you. Well, we've started with a kind of, cylindrical kind of world of European influence. Sonny, George, thank you very much indeed.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.